The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jory Slodke for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Discover. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the January-February 2022 issue. We begin with our cover story, The State of Science. The successes and lessons that made science news in 2021 and what they mean for you in the year ahead. No doubt about it, the state of science in 2021 was overshadowed by a pandemic hangover of epic proportions. In 2022, a groundbreaking vaccine will make all the difference, not just for COVID-19, but potentially for other diseases as well. And there's much more to be excited about, from the hunt for signs of life on Mars to experiments that could redefine physics as we know it. Turn the page to check out our picks for the top science stories of the year. Pandemic Year 2. Vaccines are here, still the pandemic rages on. As our calendars flip to 2021, pandemic life didn't feel particularly different than it had for the past year. Except, by that point, the very first doses of a COVID-19 vaccine had been administered. Over the next few months, as people hit their immunity mark, 2 weeks after their final dose, those who had been staying home began to venture back into the world. And on May 13th, the CDC announced liberating new guidelines, allowing vaccinated people to resume activities without wearing a mask or physically distancing. A return to normal seemed to be on the way. But normal never arrived. The vaccine rollout worldwide was marred by vaccine hesitancy in some areas and inequities in availability in others. By July 25th, 2 months after children ages 12 to 15 were approved for vaccination, more than 164 million people in the U.S. had been fully vaccinated, roughly 50% of the population. But some 14 to 26% of unvaccinated Americans said they would not get a shot, according to Gallup polling and other surveys. Globally, vaccination rates were much lower, at only 14% fully vaccinated, with countries like Australia and South Korea falling below average due to bureaucratic delays, and more than a dozen others coming in under 1%. Meanwhile, some highly vaccinated communities in the U.S. remained overly cautious, continuing masking even when CDC guidelines said they didn't need to, while others had resisted masks from the start. There are people on both ends. Preeti Malani, chief health officer at the University of Michigan, said in July, "I think both views are a little bit unfortunate for different reasons. We've got to bring everyone to the middle." Still, new U.S. daily COVID cases, as well as death rates, dropped off continuously from the all-time high in January 2021 to a low just under 8,500 new cases on June 14th. The next month, CDC Director Rochelle Walensky announced that over 97% of people entering U.S. hospitals with COVID-19 were unvaccinated, a strong statement to the vaccine's efficacy. Then the tides began to turn. Virus mutations, combined with low vaccination rates, dashed any hopes of a clean end to the pandemic, says University of Wisconsin virologist Dave O'Connor. The story of 2020 was the emergence and global spread of the virus and the extraordinary development of highly effective vaccines, O'Connor says. The story of 2021 is going to be, but wait, the variants. Variation in a continually evolving virus isn't surprising, but the impact that SARS-CoV-2's variants have had is exceptional. The first detected variant, B.1.1.7 Alpha, thought to have emerged in September 2020 in the UK, sounded an initial alarm that grew louder as three more variants, including B.1.617.2 Delta, popped up worldwide. I think we didn't appreciate 6 months ago that the variants would be the factor that it has become. Bronwyn McGinnis, genomic epidemiologist at the Broad Institute, said this summer. Driven by Delta, India's second wave peaked in May, killing more than 3,500 people per day for 3 weeks straight. That same month, Moderna announced early success in trials with booster shots to combat Beta and Gamma, and they confirmed the next month that it protected against Delta and other variants. A July study in the New England Journal of Medicine found that a two-shot dose of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine was 88% effective against Delta. But for the 86% of the world that remained unvaccinated, the news was not much relief. By late July, Delta was responsible for over 80% of U.S. cases. Researchers confirmed vaccinated people can still transmit the variant, and a new set of CDC guidelines recommended that everyone mask up indoors in high transmission areas. Then in August, the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine received full FDA approval, with Biden announcing booster shots would begin in the fall, based on research showing a dip in efficacy for some vaccines after 6 months. Plenty of challenges remain 2 years after the virus first appeared. Researchers still don't know what causes post-acute COVID-19 syndrome. Doctors continue to treat these long haulers, who could number in the tens of millions, for symptoms rather than underlying causes. And the origins of the virus itself remain elusive. Plus, the window for inquiry is closing as key samples disappear, according to a team of international researchers appointed by the World Health Organization for origin tracing. In late August, the scientists published a commentary in Nature urging for fast-track biological studies and access to data in China regarding the earliest cases of COVID-19 identified in Wuhan. Origins aside, O'Connor says that three key players in the pandemic will likely transform the way that medicine and science work going forward: mRNA vaccines, therapeutic monoclonal antibodies, and the arrival of genomics in public health. Tracking and mapping different variations of a disease is nothing new, says McGinnis, but the methods have grown up with the times. Rather than tracking a specific mutation, researchers now track entire viral genomes. Knowing this will be part of the toolkit for infectious disease control in the future is really gratifying, she says. mRNA takes on COVID. Perhaps the most significant technological achievement of 2021, the mRNA vaccine combated COVID-19 across the globe with startling speed and efficacy. The development of the mRNA vaccine, a breakthrough in its field, instructing cells to produce their own protection without the risk of giving someone the virus, was fast and furious, made possible through rapid genome sequencing. But its origins go back to the late 1980s, when Kati Kariko, a researcher at the University of Pennsylvania, began experimenting with placing mRNA, M stands for messenger, into cells to instruct them to produce new proteins, even if those cells had been previously unable to do so. Eventually, Kariko also discovered that pseudouridine, a molecule of human tRNA, T stands for transfer, could help a vaccine evade an immune response when added to the mRNA. It laid the groundwork for a first-of-its-kind antidote that helped save hundreds of thousands of lives, becoming the vaccine of choice for our times. The implications of this 2005 breakthrough were huge. Cells, it turned out, could be harnessed into producing protein without triggering an immune attack. Furthermore, synthetic mRNA could be used instead of putting an actual virus into the body to produce a vaccine. Research continued. By the end of 2019, American biotechnology company Moderna and Germany's BioNTech, a partner with Pfizer, had been researching mRNA flu vaccines for several years. This work put them in a position to respond quickly when COVID-19 emerged. Within mere hours of Chinese scientists posting the coronavirus's genetic sequence in January 2020, BioNTech had developed its mRNA vaccine. Days later, Moderna had its own. Other hurdles to implementation, such as clinical trials, approvals, mass production, and distribution, would take several more months, unprecedented rapidity in the world of vaccine development. Yet not fast enough for millions across the globe who were sick and dying from the virus. By November 2020, clinical results found that the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine was a potent antidote to COVID-19, showing a 95% efficacy against the virus. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration granted emergency use authorization, and the first shipments of the vaccine were delivered in December 2020. To date, more than 4 billion doses of COVID vaccine have been injected into arms around the world. So, how does it work? Once mRNA, encased in a lipid bubble, is injected, the vaccine attaches to a cell, instructing it to produce a harmless replica of the spike protein, the significant marker of the coronavirus, which allows COVID-19 to inject itself into human cells, triggering an immune response. Because mRNA does not enter or interact with the cell nucleus, it does not alter human DNA. Once the cell uses the instructions, it breaks down the mRNA. As opposed to the time it takes to produce traditional vaccines created with inactivated viruses, and therefore time-consuming and expensive, mRNA can be produced almost instantly. It's been a game-changer, says Tom Kenyon, Chief Health Officer at Project Hope and former Director of Global Health at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, where he spent more than two decades combating global diseases. In comparison with other pandemics, such as HIV, the science in COVID-19 has moved much faster, Kenyon says, because all that research and investment has paid off. These are vaccines that give very strong immunity, which we never had in previous attempts. Now he believes we can develop effective vaccines much faster. It's not just the speed, it's the efficacy of the vaccine that's so incredible, Kenyon says. That's what gives everybody in the public health community hope. John Kokai-Kun, Director of External Scientific Collaboration for Biologics for USP, a nonprofit focused on building trust in the supply of medicines, says that mRNA will be the technology of choice for most future vaccines. Kokai-Kun, who spent most of his career working on the research and development of antibacterial drugs and vaccines, also sees the speed of production in the lab as a key benefit of mRNA. You can just type the sequence into a computer and just make a synthetic RNA molecule, Kokai-Kun says. You don't have to make cell banks and seed banks and viral stocks and clone things. It's almost a plug-and-play scenario. The development of mRNA technology has implications far beyond COVID-19 and could be used to combat HIV, influenza, and malaria. It also shows tremendous promise against new viruses with epidemic potential, such as avian influenza and other respiratory viruses. But its potential to treat cancer, which it can do by provoking the immune system to target cancer cells, is especially exciting. Most traditional immunotherapy for cancer uses passive immunity, where a drug acts as the antibody and doesn't always last long. But active immunity, achieved with mRNA, means the body can remember how to create the response on its own. The biggest drawback, currently, is the production capacity. Many parts of the world would need help setting up the capacity to produce these vaccines. The mRNA story is by far the greatest story of this pandemic, and it's an amazing scientific accomplishment but we haven't translated that yet into programmatic results. And that's what matters, Kenyon cautions. Hollywood science. Thanks to science advisors, movies and TV shows are working to get the details right. While on-screen depictions of stretchy mutants or a toilet-terrorizing dinosaur may seem completely independent from real-life research, movie and TV production crews, propelled by the science fiction boom of the 1970s, have spent decades seeking out scientists to fact-check scripts and special effects. As it turns out, even the wackiest plots can benefit from some expert knowledge. For example, Ann Simon, a virologist at the University of Maryland and consultant on The X-Files, broke it to the series creator that a virus couldn't, in fact, theoretically transform into a monster. And the benefits go both ways. Popular media has helped spark research developments and garner funding in science fields. Since being established by the National Academy of Sciences in 2008, the Science and Entertainment Exchange has helped pair filmmakers with researchers from specific fields. Previously, the entertainment industry had to track down experts on their own, says David A. Kirby, author of Lab Coats in Hollywood, Science, Scientists, and Cinema. Now the Science and Entertainment Exchange simplifies the advisor search and helps facilitate technical knowledge on set. Kirby says science advisors tend to fall into three categories. First, there's publicity-generating names like physicist Brian Greene, who worked on the 2006 Denzel Washington time travel flick Deja Vu. There are also readily available researchers who can keep tabs on a variety of topics, like geneticist Adam Rutherford, who lent his expertise to Alex Garland's sci-fi films Annihilation and Ex Machina. Finally, some academics stand out because of their niche specialties. For the 2020 film Palm Springs, time travel aficionado Clifford Johnson helped iron out the physics behind the movie's Groundhog Day-esque plot. Simon, meanwhile, stumbled onto The X-Files by coincidence. She began working with creator Chris Carter, who is a family friend, after he ran into her mother at a party. At the time, Carter lamented that he had found a physics consultant, but he needed a biologist to look over his scripts. Her mother suggested that he give Simon a call. "I was so excited," Simon says. "Before The X-Files, it was really bad how science and scientists were being presented. Until relatively recently, popular media neglected fact-checking and mostly offered negative, mad scientist-oriented stereotypes. A survey of more than 1,000 horror films from 1931 to 1984 found that a third portrayed scientists or their creations as villains or monsters, while merely 11% painted them as heroes. Later, a 2003 study similarly concluded that even good movie scientists across genres commonly succumb to evil and corruption. On-screen researchers also typically lacked complex storylines or even details of their personal lives, the 2003 article found. That's a problem because most people don't know scientists themselves and form opinions based on the media they consume, Simon says, leading to a dehumanizing effect. You want people to realize that scientists are just people who like to solve puzzles, she says. Factual errors and one-dimensional portrayals have real-world consequences. As of 1981, people who frequently watch TV were more likely than occasional viewers to mistrust science, view it as dangerous, and reject the entire career path. That's the primary reason why researchers like Simon say they work on Hollywood projects, to counter these misconceptions. Representation has improved in recent decades, according to Kirby, likely because it's far more common to recruit science consultants. Now, audiences expect more sophisticated explanations behind far-out plots. You can't really get away with the goofy stereotypes that you used to, she says, unless it's a horror flick or a comedy. He finds that Hollywood now tends to heroize scientists, but glorifying the profession also has its downsides. It may obscure the fact that researchers are human and can make mistakes too. The influence of science advisors isn't just limited to what we see on screen. In fact, some theories injected by film consultants have sparked scholarly debate outside of theaters. Jurassic Park paleontology consultant Jack Horner encouraged the filmmakers to imply that birds evolved from dinosaurs, an idea that was controversial at the time, but has since gained traction. Popular media can also raise awareness about and indirectly boost funding for certain fields. Outbreak and Contagion snap viewers' attention towards the threat of emerging viruses, Kirby says, and the CDC leveraged the latter in meetings to demonstrate why its work matters. Deep Impact and Armageddon, meanwhile, may have helped government officials rally behind NASA's Near-Earth Object program. Hollywood has directly funded studies, too. While science advisors usually work for free, they sometimes accept studio donations to their academic research. Production companies have also paid museums and labs to film at their locations. Science consulting can even help with grant applications. National Science Foundation grants require that a project's impact reaches beyond the lab, so applicants can claim that their advising work helps advance the public's scientific literacy. Multidimensional portrayals of scientists and their work can also galvanize young people to enter STEM fields. This is evident in the Scully effect, which theorizes that the X-Files character Dana Scully motivated young women to pursue science careers. As one of the first prominent on-screen female scientists, the medical doctor and skeptical FBI agent also had a ripple effect within the entertainment industry, allegedly influencing characters like forensic anthropologist Temperance Bones Brennan from Bones. As a result, more than 60% of women familiar with Dana Scully say that she increased their belief in the importance of STEM, according to a 2018 survey by the Gina Davis Institute on Gender in Media. The show's more devoted viewers were more likely to respond that girls should be encouraged to study STEM, the survey also reported. Simon has seen the effect of these depictions in her own classroom. She once asked her freshman intro to biology course whether the X-Files had inspired them to study science. About two-thirds of students raised their hands. They're seeing a positive portrayal of science, and it's affecting people going into it, she says. It was terrific that a television series literally influenced a generation. Learning a language literally changes your brain. Picking up a new language could make you a better person and may even help stave off dementia. If you've ever learned a new language, or tried to, you know how difficult it can be. Native languages seem almost built in. We soak them up naturally when we're very young. But learning a new language, especially after early childhood, can be a huge task, burdened by long vocabulary lists and genders to memorize, complex cases, and troublesome tenses to master. Of course, it's worth the effort. In today's interconnected world, learning a new language can change your life. It will certainly change your brain. Learning anything changes your brain, at least a little bit, but learning a language does it in high gear. John Grundy, a neuroscientist at Iowa State University who specializes in bilingualism and the brain, explains that learning a new language causes extensive neuroplasticity in the brain. In other words, when you learn a new language, your brain gets rearranged, new connections are made, and new pathways are formed. Those extra pathways can come in handy. Grundy offers a useful analogy. Imagine that you always take the same route to work. Then one day, the road is washed out. Now what? If you'd varied your route over the years, you'd have options already in mind. You could hop on another road and maybe make it to your desk before your boss noticed you were late. It's really just a remodeling of the brain that allows it to become more efficient, Grundy says. A 2012 study found that this remodeling can be significant. After 3 months of intense language study, recruits at the Swedish Armed Forces Interpreter Academy had increases in cortical thickness areas associated with language processing. And these changes don't help with only language functions. Ashley Chung-Fat Yim, who researches bilingualism at Northwestern University, says they affect the part of the brain that controls executive processing. They use that area for language control, but also for other non-linguistic purposes as well, she says. These non-linguistic purposes include things like the ability to plan for future behaviors, monitor and change behavior as needed, and switch between tasks. Being bilingual might also make you a nicer person. There is, says Chung-Fat Yim, some connection between bilingualism and theory of mind, the ability to attribute mental states to other people. Bilingual children must know that, say, speaker A can understand both languages, but speaker B can understand only one. The bilingual person has to have an awareness that different people can hold different mental states about the same event, she says. The authors of a 2016 study on theory of mind think that it's likely that bilinguals also develop greater empathy. Knowing a second language can also help prevent, or at least delay, cognitive decline. There's a consistent finding that bilinguals are able to stave off symptoms of dementia for about 4 to 6 years compared to monolinguals, says Grundy. And that's pretty impressive considering the best medications we have can postpone the symptoms for only about a year or so. If you're thinking it's too late, you're probably wrong. We often think only children can learn languages with ease. It's true that young children do more quickly learn whatever language they're exposed to, but when it comes to adding on a new one, adults aren't at as much of a disadvantage as you might think. Chung-Fat Yim says it's not so much the age at which you learn a new language as the way you learn it. If you practice a lot and immerse yourself in the language, you can see the benefits at any age, especially when you get older. Snuggle stress. A hibernating Arctic ground squirrel may look serene, but it's under significant stress. At least its body is. To survive the brutal winter, these critters slip into a deep sleep that can last for weeks at a time. Burrowed safely, they alternate between periods of low oxygen consumption and brief rewarming periods of normal consumption. The sudden changes can kick off a chain reaction in the body that produces hydrogen peroxide, resulting in excessive inflammation. We've run out of time for today's episode of Discover. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jory Slodke, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Discover is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call area code 919-832-5138. That number again is area code 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.